Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Dream Big Podcast with Bob Goff and Friends. I'm your co-host, Scott Schimmel. I'm here with Bob Goff.
Hey, everybody. I hope it's been a terrific week filled with not only a bunch of adventure, but some times of reflection. And I know one thing that all of us have in common, we have careers, we have things that we spend our time doing, and we have relationships, the people that we do it with. And today we get to hear from Bianca Oldhoff, who's been a friend for many years, and she's actually good at really both of those things. She's got a lot to say about relationships and career. She is a gal that is so full of energy, and I just love that about her. And I think what you're going to enjoy is hearing from her, like, where did that come from? What does she do with that? And then her thoughts about relationships and career. So listen in. Bianca, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you for being my friend. I'm excited to be in the podcast.
We've gone back quite a few years, and I was trying to think of when I met you first. And when people meet you, they actually know that, because you're just so full of life and energy and sass. And it's just really a beautiful combination. How did you get that way?
You know what? I think I've been like this since a kid. I've been always optimistic. I love dreaming. I was always the kid, like a journal or notebook, an art pad. And also, like, I don't subscribe to Enneagram numbers being like our exact personality type, but I am an Enneagram 7. And I just think, like, I love wide-eyed wonder, and I love dreaming. And it's always been like that since I was.
For people that haven't met you before, tell us, I know you have a church, the Father's House, you're a writer and a speaker, and you're a wife and a mom and all these beautiful things. So tell us what your life looks like and the things that light you up.
Okay. So I'm passionate. I am, like, wild about this man named Jesus. And I think if for those that don't come from, like, a spiritual or religious background, he's just like my best friend. And it's been my best friend advocate since I was a kid. And I'm wild about him. I love words. I couldn't read, write, or spell until about the age of 12.
Really? I didn't know that about you.
Yeah, first-generation American, really struggled academically, lived in East Los Angeles, California, aka the hood. So it just, academics was really hard. Life was really hard. Life was really scary. So I think that this feeling of safe has always been something that's been like this muse, this siren that sings out to see, like, if I could just be safe, it would be okay. And then, like, life is, even now, when life may feel like a little bit more safe, I don't think there's anything about my life that is safe. I'm now going into prisons and jails. My husband and I planted a church of crazy people that just believe that we can make an impact and a change in our community. And I'm a stepmom, which there's nothing safe about step-parenting. And I love, I feel like the kid that fought for words asked God, if you give me words, I'll give you my voice. And so now I just want to use my voice to bring a sense of freedom for the incarcerated, as well as those that are living a life physically free, but maybe feeling like their soul or their mind or their heart might be imprisoned.
Yeah. One of the things that we've done together, you've come up and taught with me at Pepperdine Law School, this failure class that we do, which is so fun. If you haven't heard in another podcast, we teach this class on failure. And what I do is bring my friends, because law school is about, like, win, win, win. And I want to be like real, real, real. Like, let's just talk what happens when your left rear wheel passes you in the fast lane in life.
But can we tell your listeners that when you invited me to Pepperdine Law, I mean, I think I told you that I died. And, like, yes, I'm dramatic, but, like, I literally almost, like, I had heart palpitations because Pepperdine was my dream school. So I always wanted to go to Pepperdine. That's, like, I had my eyes on the prize. I'm going to get into Pepperdine. It's going to be great. And I got rejected from Pepperdine.
No.
And I don't know if I told you this. So the fact that I got to go to Pepperdine and teach in their flipping law school, I was
adjunct professor, baby.
Yeah, Pepperdine.
One of the things that you have always been a really clarion voice in my life and so many others is in relationships. And so I wanted to talk this episode about dreaming big for relationships. And give me some of the advice that you've passed along. I know those that follow you on Instagram, it just has your just beautiful, sassy, like kind voice. It's just really beautiful. Some of the advice, what are the kinds of things that you're seeing people ask about relationships, and how do you dream bigger about what they might be?
So this is like a side passion project. It's not even something like, I wouldn't necessarily clarify myself as like a relationship expert. I do not have a background in like therapy or counseling or relationships, but I'm wildly passionate about healthy relationships. And I think, you know, that some of our greatest work comes out of points of like conflict or pain. And so I have a twin sister, and she met her now husband when we were in high school, and they got married when they were 24, 25. And especially, so my background is I'm Latina, I'm Hispanic. And so within Hispanic culture, usually by the age of like 18, you're married and have 5 kids. And so like my path was not that. I went from college to graduate school, and I wanted to be in a relationship. I wanted to get married. It just didn't really happen until I was 30 years old and I met my husband, Matt, in an unconventional way. Now online dating feels like a little bit more normal, but you know, 8 years ago, this was not a normal thing, and, or at least as normal as it is today. So I feel like I'm passionate about healthy relationships. And then also I have a blended family. So I have 2 stepkids, and I call his ex-wife my ex-wife. So I have an ex-wife, and then also like we come from like different ethnic backgrounds and socioeconomic backgrounds. And so I'm wildly fascinated. Like, how do we love well? And love well doesn't mean how do we love when we're married. It's how do we love in friendships? How do we love in parenting relationships? How do we love in dating relationships and marriage relationships? So that's a little bit of the background of where this stems from. Now, I am more open and more vocal about like dating relationships, because I feel like I should be married like 10 years and be a parent for 10 years before I start speaking with authority on it. Because I still think like I'm on the struggle bus. Like, I want to talk about it the way that you and Maria talk about it. Because I look at your marriage and I'm like, that's the marriage I want.
Oh man, we're still, it's amateur night. We're still figuring out things.
That gives me hope, man.
She's scratching her head most of the time. And I say, I'm sorry most of the time. And, but that's the thing about relationships, that if you want some of these dreams that you have, some ambitions that you have, one of the things to get squared away is some of the relationships around you. Who are the people that are closest to us? Because we'll become who the people nearest to us say we are. If people say you're really loud or you're really quiet or you're really whatever, you're surrounded by this messaging, and then you start living into that, or you become a caricature of who you are. So I write a book and put a couple balloons on the cover, and all of a sudden I'm Balloon Boy. And that certainly, I'm an enthusiastic guy, but that describes one facet of a multifaceted person. And so what happens in a relationship sometimes, what gets in the way is people know one version of us, but not all the versions. And if we could just realize that there's just many, many versions of ourselves, but to be authentic is a challenge. Somehow you've navigated that with your arms in the air and with your voice raised. You found your authentic voice. Tell me about that. Was that hard to find, or is that just you've always been that way, just gregarious and outgoing? How would just somebody find their most authentic voice?
You know, I love that you say that and that you see that in me. I think sometimes we need to be reminded of how people view us. And I think that's probably been a struggle my whole life. I think now, as I'm getting older and in a different season, a different station in life, I keep on going back to the false sense of self. I think I will forever feel like the obese 8-year-old that was classified as special needs and couldn't read, write, and spell, and living in the ghetto, and feeling like the oppressed woman of color, you know, repeating the generational cycles. And I feel like the voice that I have walked into now is a voice that I have really fought for. And I think for a long time, I felt like for my voice to be heard, I had to look like these certain people. I had to act like these certain people. I had to be educated like these certain people. And so I started falling into a mold that I felt like, well, success is, being American is, popular is. And I felt like if I could just kind of modify, manipulate the net voice, then yeah, that'll be my voice. And I realized the thing that has made me heard has been the things that I tried to hide. Well, that's alliteration that was not planned, but I like.
Yeah, like go with that. So one of the things that in finding your voice, you've lifted it up with a strength and power and confidence and kindness and humility. And for those of you that are listening, and particularly women, I just hope you'll raise your voice and don't wait for some dude to give you permission to do that. You have permission. You don't need to be empowered. We just need to get out of your way and go be the people that you were made to be. But if we could do that with raising our own voice and having our own awareness of who we are and what we're what's next for us. Somehow you found that though. There's a imposter syndrome, and that's where you feel like you're just faking it, right? Did you know this? There's a pastor in the Midwest. He and I split a guy, and this guy just goes to try to find imposter accounts of us for the last 3 years. You know how many he's found? 25,000 imposter accounts. Is that crazy? And so people will like say, hey, donate money to this or what, and he'll get them within a day or two, but not until he puts some money in their account. The FBI goes and arrests them. I've got a strong 8 justice wing there. So like, go get the money. Just imposter me for like about a half a second and you're going to San Quentin.
The most frequent questions we hear at Dream Big are actually really simple. The questions are this: how do I do it? How do I focus on my ambitions and bring them to life? How do I reorganize everything and move towards these dreams that are inside me? That's what Dream Big is all about. And we want to give you an actual resource that you can use so that you can move from your ideas and your ambitions to reality. So go to the link in the show notes, download a really simple workbook that you can use today.
But one of the things that can happen in our lives is when we're trying to find our voice, we can start feeling like we're an imposter, that we've tried this, we've tried that. How have you found your most authentic voice? How did you reconcile all that?
So this is probably a little bit more layered and will probably take a little bit more time to unpack. But I think if I could distill it down to like simple learnings is I had people tell me what I wasn't. And I had to make a conscious decision. Am I going to live my life being defined by other people? And I know that that sounds, I think that there's a lot of memes and like cliches that are going around online, but like in the most sincere and authentic and genuine way, I had people tell me that I had to change to be this and I had to change to be accepted. And I think I tried it. I tried it and it was like Cinderella's shoe that didn't fit. It's like, that's not me.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah, I can't be that. I can't do that. And then I realized that the moment that I just started speaking from the most realist place, even the parts that I wanted to hide, even the parts that maybe felt embarrassing or unrefined, I think honestly, the surprise has been people really enjoy like my ghetto-ness. People really enjoy the fact that like this chutzpah that I have, and it came from a place of, I got tired of people telling me that I didn't belong or didn't have a seat at the table. You know what I did? I just made my own dang table. And whoever wants to sit there can sit there. And I feel like I really have learned from watching you. I feel like to kind of go back to the relationship thing really quick, you taught me this valuable lesson. We were, I can't remember where we were, but you were talking about your friend, Dawn Miller. And Dawn was in a very different season. This is years ago. And you would call Dawn and you would say, Dawn, you're really great at relationships. And I heard that and I said, I want to be a voice that speaks truth over my friends, even when they don't feel it. And my voice didn't sound like your voice. My laugh didn't sound like your laugh, but I kind of had like this, like, yo, sister, you need to stop taking that trash. You need to start being who you are. And what I realized is when I just spoke truth over them, the truth that I saw in my friends, that my voice was refined.
Isn't that crazy? When you start hoping for other people, what you're hoping for yourself, I don't know how many text messages I've received from you just for no particular reason, or there was a time where my right eye went missing. And I would just get on a little emoji, remember, with like two little eyeballs, dos ojos. But to just, there's something beautiful and redemptive about that. And for those in faith communities, that's a word that's used often. But I remember growing up, when you had a bottle and you went to the market with it, you could redeem it and you'd get a nickel back, like so by turning it in. And so it just meant that it was worth something. And I think when taking that moment to send me two eyeballs, to send me a note, hey, I'm just thinking about you, I'm lifting you guys up today, that there's something really beautiful and redemptive about that. We don't need to throw a parade. We don't need to do a skywriting. Just four or five words, finding your authentic words, not blowing sunshine at each other, just speaking truth over people. And then when you tell somebody, they have a terrific smile, or you just lighten up the room when you come in. It's not a pickup line. It just means you're Switzerland, you're a safe voice, and you can just say that, wow, it really means a lot that you would think to do that for me.
And I think that you, I've learned this from you, and you've never said this, as I wouldn't say that there's nomenclature or language or like the guide, but I've watched you, like if you see something, you say it. And I've learned I'm talking about like friendships, I'm talking about marriage, I'm even talking about like leadership or people that come to our church. Sometimes we think a lot of great things, like, wow, what a great person. Or, hey, wait, they look so cute today. Or, wow, what a great smile. We think it, but we don't say it. And what you've empowered me to do just from like watching your life is that if you see it, you say it. And so now with our people at church, with our leadership, with my husband, instead of expecting him to read my mind, I tell him, babe, you look so handsome today. I love your haircut. And this is where it gets a little crazy. And I think I embarrass Matt, which is my husband. We're out. And if our waiter has a great smile or great eyes or great eyebrows or, you know, a good makeup job, even if it's a guy, even when I'm in front of my husband, I'll tell my waiter, hey, I'm sitting here with my husband who I'm wildly mad about, but let me tell you, you are a great looking guy. Do you know when you smile, you light up a room and they look at you a little weird, but I'm just like, I'd rather just tell you the truth, because if I see it, I'm going to say it. And you just need to be reminded of how awesome you are. I know it's weird, but I really feel like it changes the world.
I think there's a non-creepy way of saying it. That you can pass along compliments to people, and not because you're trying to curry their favor. There's nothing on the other side of the equal sign. And if we become really safe people to do, that would be among the things that make relationships really work for you. One of the corollaries to that is career, because I know you've written a book, and I want to hear about that. But the things that we spend our days doing, that we have a lot more agency and control over that than we think that we do. I think there are many people that are listening, they're just kind of over their job, but they're doing it for a beautiful, noble reason, like paying for groceries and sending a kid to school. And I want to just applaud you for that. Yet, I want to also release you from that and to say, you actually don't need to do just that. Your capabilities are broader than you perhaps think. Your opportunities are broader than you think. And so while you do the noble work you're doing, can take part of the day. You could think of it as tithing your time if you want to think of it in that, to say 10% of my day, I'm going to work 110% of my job, but 10% of that is going to actually be trying to find something that's better suited to this whole idea of a new creation, that we're like the newest version of us. How do you help people sync up with their careers and starting to dream big about who they're turning into and finding some kind of connection between who they become and the things that they spend their days doing?
Yeah. So I want to be very careful. This doesn't sound like I'm perpetuating the hustle culture, because I think right now there's this like big, you know, movement for like hustle and grind and go 100 and, you know, fake it till you make it. I want to be very careful that people don't hear that that's what I'm saying. This comes out of a place of, when we feel see, this is weird language, man, but this enigmatic word of like calling or purpose, you know, I'm just going to say like the nudge, because I feel like that's a little bit language that we all can like enjoy. When you have a nudge that you're not at the place that you're supposed to be, when you have the nudge that you're supposed to be doing something different, when you have a nudge, like you just have this desire to start something or to help someone, trust that nudge and work 1000% at that. So for me, I had a full-time job. I was working for an anti-human trafficking organization, and I felt this nudge that I had to these words were burning inside of me, and I didn't know what to do with that. Now, I think in the crazy, you know, kind of millennial culture, I'm a millennial. I'm on the top end of millennial scale, but as a millennial, I'm just like, you know what? Just toss it, toss caution to the wind. I'm just going to go live in a hut, and I'm going to write books, and I'm going to use my words. But I feel like there's almost like this sense of like recklessness to this. So I think if I can encourage anyone, if you feel like you have that nudge, if you feel like you have that hunch, if you feel like there's this quote unquote calling or purpose that you are called to, what would it look like in the twilight hours? What would it look like in the early morning hours to commit to that? So for me, I had a full-time job. I worked from 8 until 5:30. And there's traffic each and every way. I felt really committed to these words that I believe I was supposed to document and write. And so I started writing books probably around 5 years ago. And I would wake up at 4:30. And not because like, oh, I'm under the grind or I'm on a book contract or I'm this. I just decided if I feel called to this, I'm going to write words. And if people read them, if people listen, amazing. And so I just started taking that baby step. I'd wake up at 4:30 and I'd write from 4:30 to 6. And that's what it was. And lo and behold, it turned into something that was actually a book. It turned into things that were talks and messages or in maybe in the faith-filled community, like a sermon where you feel like, hey, God's got this message that I got to tell you type of thing. And so I love like when people feel stuck, when they feel like I'm at the end of my rope, or I feel like I'm just on this like, I'm on this carousel just going round and round and round. Hey, this is how you get off the crazy train. What if you just kept on doing what is keeping you afloat right now, but then like, what would it look like in the off moments, in the dream moments, in the what if moments, in the imagination, in the impossible moments? You begin to imagine what your life would look like if you walked into that calling, that nudge, that purpose.
It really kind of, these kind of blend together, realizing in relationship we're multifaceted, but then realizing in terms of capability and aptitude that we have so many different things you can do, and get out of the sense that it's binary, that I do this and that means I don't do that, do both. And then where you have an opportunity, something grows. You find enough words, you put a binding on it, and then you've got a book. If you want to be a speaker, go to Rotary Club, go to Arby's, go talk to the mailman, but then just look for another opportunity to have a bigger venue to do that. If you have words to say, and one of the common things, threads from what you've said, is the words that we use. And one thing that can sometimes set us free is to lose all the words that have all the baggage that aren't that helpful. So like lose calling and say a nudge. And that isn't disrespectful. I checked in with Jesus. He's okay with both. But you don't get confused that we have other messages getting sent in. Find the resources that you need. Take the next step. Hey, tell us about the book that you wrote.
Okay, so hold on. I will. It'll be fine. But let me tell you this. I love what you're saying about like the power of these words and like trusting it and the simplicity of them. Because 2 years ago, went into prisons and jails because I just felt like, hey, I just want to love people well, and I feel like so many of our incarcerated brothers and sisters are not being loved well right now or thought of, and being thought of is love as well. So what, when you're talking about the simplicity of words and this fact of just doing it, I challenge my friends in prison. What would it look like for you to take your words as a sense of freedom? And some of the writing, ooh, I'm getting emotional thinking about it. Some of the writing that is coming out of jails and prisons is so freeing and is so beautiful. And so when I hear people talk about like, I don't know what to say, I don't have words to say, I don't have a story to say, I feel like some of the stories that are coming out of jails, prisons, and detention centers are filled with the most beautiful, simplistic language. And they started making decisions. So I told them like, hey, what would it look like instead of your rec time to be like lifting weights or watching television during your rec time or free time? What would it look like to begin to write down your words and your story, whether it's through poems, whether it's through autobiographical writings, whether it's stories? And Bob, let me tell you something. the dreams and impossible things that are coming out of these men and women are mind-blowing. So I don't want to come down like a heavy iron fist, but when people say like, oh, I don't have time, or I don't have things to say, or I don't have margin for that, I'm going to push back. I'm so going to push back. What would it look like to turn off our televisions? What would it look like to turn off our podcasts and our radios? I mean, not this podcast, because this is a great one, but what would it look like to turn off our social media and begin to dream big?
You know, one of the things that you can do if you're listening is, if you think writing a book is too much, how about writing a sentence? If you think writing a sentence is too much, how about writing a word? And then you can just double it every day. Say two words today, four words tomorrow. And there's something beautiful about just starting in relationships and career. And I do want to wrap up with what we're talking about with the resource that you have that's out there. Tell us about your book.
Yeah. So I came out with my most recent book called How to Have Your Life Not Suck. And it's definitely geared for women, but I'm having so many guys read it to understand women.
Come on.
Just like, hey, I don't want my life to suck. But it's written for the millennial next gen guy and girl. Like, it's really simple. It's super simple. We talk about simple words. It's broken up into three different sections. The first one is on relationships and dating. The second is on faith and spirituality. And then the last section is on adulting and growing up. I believe in the power of words, and I believe that simple words can change lives. And that's what this resource does.
Well, let me give you the simplest two words I can think of. Like, just thank you. Thanks for being a voice that is one that I trust. Thanks for being a friend for many years and for lifting your authentic voice in just so many different beautiful contexts, whether it's in prisons, at the church that you lead. If you're listening and you want to find out more about Bianca, find her. She's not hard to find. And then what we would both, I think, join in saying is find your voice. And then lift your voice and don't wait for permission. If you need the Jedi move, I'm making it right now. You've got permission. And so go start with the relationships. Start with the people God's already surrounded you with. Go love them well without an agenda. Start with your career. Figure out your day job and to say, I know this is something I'm capable of, but is this something I'm made for? And then just take the next steps. Don't take all of them. Be kind to yourself. Your body has rights. Your time has rights. And to say, I'm just going to take the next step, not driven by guilt, but driven by resolve. And Bianca, thank you so much for making some time.
This is so fun. Thank you so much.
Well, Bob, I love the title of her book, How to Have Your Life Not Suck, which I think you couldn't say it more plainly and clearly. And that's what you get when you listen to Bianca.
That would be a good goal every day. Just like,
wake up every day.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that we're trying to all navigate are these very impossible things. Sometimes relationships go great. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes careers go great. Sometimes they don't. But I hope that we would have the awareness about who we are in the middle of, while our circumstances are really fluid from time to time, while relationships you could start having in astronomy, there's apogee and perigee, times where you're closest together, times where you're furthest apart, but yet you remain in orbit. So if you think of the people that are in orbit around you, how are you managing those relationships? And are you being authentic yourself throughout all those cycles of close and far away? And the same with your work. What's your relationship with what you do for a day job? And I think Bianca did such a good job for us just describing how we could be authentic and how she's learned how to live into her most authentic self.
And keep asking these open-ended questions, not just how can I keep my life from sucking, but her question is, how do I love well? And that's a daily task. It's a daily open-ended question. Teach me. I want to learn how to love well and love better.
Yeah, and one of the things that we're very intuitive about is how well everybody else is loving us. That I feel loved well. And what I'd like to also have as a metric is, am I a reservoir or am I a river? Mm-hmm. And I want to be this river that's passing on all the best things that I've received from other people. And the crazy part, and it's this reverse economy Jesus always talked about, you want to figure out more about who you are, figure out more about who other people are in your life, and then live authentically into those relationships. So you guys, thanks for listening. Get out there, go love some people, find the people around you, speak words of truth over them. It doesn't need to be hokey. Find the just simplest words you can use and the most accurate ones. And there's something beautiful that happens. You'll change, the people around you'll change, you'll figure out more about who you're made to be.